forgive my father.
There's a better world to come and tell you why. There's a better world to come and tell you why. We will feed them on the land, on the sea, and in the sky. There's a better world to come and tell you why. There's a better world to come and don't you see? When we'll all be union and we'll all be free. There's a better world to come and don't you see?
Hello there, ladies and gentlemen. Once again, it's time for Progressive News Network. And today we have a very interesting guest, someone who's concerned not just about pesticide safety, but who's also concerned about workers' rights. Let me introduce to you Ms. Jeannie Economos, who has worked for over 25 years in the field of worker rights, worker safety, pesticide safety, etc. Jeannie, welcome.
Thank you. Glad to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
Well, it's our honor to have you. Jeannie, why don't you tell us what we need to know about things going on right now?
Well, last week, the Farm Worker Association of Florida, along with some other ally groups around the country, including Earth Justice and Farm Worker Justice, launched a campaign called the Safer Farm Workers, Families, and Food Campaign. And with this campaign, we sent 15 farm workers from around the country to Washington, D.C., to meet with congressional staffers and the EPA and the USDA to call for stronger protections for farm workers against pesticide exposure. This has been a long process. We have been waiting for 13 years for the Environmental Protection Agency to improve the standards that protect farm workers against pesticide exposure, and we just feel that we can't wait any longer. It's about time for EPA to get these standards pushed through, and this was a big effort to get farm workers to speak on their own behalf in this effort.
Oh, that's wonderful. One would hope that simply the danger that these people who collect the food that we all eat, you'd think that their danger would be enough, and I'm sure you'd try to make the simultaneous case that not only is their exposure bad, but also consumers' exposure is bad too. Tell me what, you know, I've looked at some of the news stories, and it's horrific. It's absolutely horrific. What kind of chemistry are they exposed to now on what amounts to a daily basis?
Well, unfortunately, farm workers work in a variety of crops, and there's a variety of different pests that affect those crops. So basically, they're pretty much exposed to a toxic soup of chemicals, both fertilizers and pesticides. And some of these pesticides that they're exposed to are known to cause long-term chronic health effects, in addition to acute effects from direct exposure. But some of these pesticides have been linked to things like Parkinson's disease, autoimmune diseases, birth defects, and even more recent studies have even linked high body burden of toxins to diabetes and arthritis and things like that. So we have some very serious issues of farm workers' long-term chronic health impacts from being exposed daily just to provide us the food that we eat every day.
Now, Jeannie, I'm sure many people have no idea what the fields look like and what kind of the experience these folks have. Correct me if I'm wrong, there's typically no way for them to rinse off or wash off so that the exposure that they have from spending their day bending over the fields or crawling among the plants, they don't have any way of really cleaning that themselves off before they get home at the end of the day. Is that correct?
Let me just say first of all that a lot of people, when I say the word farm worker, a lot of people don't even know what I'm talking about. They think of farmers, and they don't even have any recognition. Farm workers are still, unfortunately, the invisible ones. And so sometimes we have to just even educate people about what farm workers, who they are. And these are the people that are allowing us to have an abundant and cheap food supply. And they are exposed to all kinds of risks. There are regulations that were started in the mid-1990s, that farms are required to have hand-washing water, soap, towels, paper towels, and things like that. Those are part of the regulations, and part of the regulations, those are field sanitation laws. The problem is that even though these laws exist on the books, we find that there's very often violations, both of the field sanitation laws and the worker protection standards. Let me just tell you a quick case. I work in the Apopka area, and about 4 months ago, we did a pesticide training for some farm workers in the town of Zellwood. And a couple of days after we did the pesticide training, one of the farm workers called me up and said that he had had some serious symptoms from being exposed to pesticides. So he came in and we had a talk, and I reported to the Department of Agriculture and the Department of Health his symptoms, and that there were violations of the worker protection standards in his workplace. He worked at a nursery in Central Florida. His symptoms included dizziness, headaches, including a brief period of unconsciousness. That's pretty serious exposure, pretty serious symptoms. We made the report, and just 2 days ago, I got the report of the investigation and the inspection of the nursery back, and I was appalled. I have to say I'm really outraged today, because the report that I got back was that they found 7 counts of violations of the worker protection standards at this nursery. The nursery was fined $4,000. But then the conclusion was that they could not link the workers' symptoms to pesticide exposure, in spite of the fact that he had all these symptoms and there were all these violations. And I just think it's an outrage. What do we have to do? What do farm workers have to go through in order to get documentation, recognition that their health symptoms are related to their exposure to pesticides in the workplace? A $4,000 fine for Florida, that's good. But how good is that, that this nursery should be fined $4,000 when this gentleman's health could be at risk long-term because of his exposure? It's just an outrage, and we need to change it.
You're absolutely right. I just recently saw the Gasland 2 movie, and one of the things that they mentioned there is that the EPA, after doing the studies that show the danger to people who just live in the area where this fracking is going on, they backed off any kind of constraint, any kind of punishment, any kind of sanction. And basically, off the record, the scientists told the people that live in these places, don't drink the water. It's deadly poison, but we can't do anything about it. In a climate of deregulation where, I'm just going to say, the Republicans basically see no regulation that should be enforced. They're talking about gutting the EPA. I'm afraid that we're all at great danger. And unfortunately, our friends in the farm workers are on the front lines of this.
Exactly. And I did see Gasland 2 also. And I've been doing environmental and environmental justice work for many years. And in spite of that, I was really shocked at what I learned about in Gasland. But it is indicative of just how corporations have a stranglehold on our government, our economy, and our personal lives. And the only way that we're going to get change is if we all stand up. We can't stand up just as individuals, although we have to do that too, but we have to stand up together. One of the things that I say to farm workers when we do our pesticide trainings and our other trainings is that we're much more than individuals. We're a community. And the only way that we're going to make significant change is if we act as a community and fight for our rights. And that's one of the things that we're doing right now with this campaign and with our efforts last week in Washington, D.C., which will be ongoing both on the statewide level and on a national level. and we invite everybody to join us. One more thing I'd like to say. I use the term farm workers, and I think sometimes that makes it too easy for people to lump people into a category and then just ignore them. But when you say farm workers and translate that into men and women and children, I think it helps personalize it. It helps humanize the people that are doing this work because they are. They're families. They're men and women and children that are working in these fields. Men, women, and children should not be subjected to these conditions. They're workers, they're farm workers, but they're men and women and children. They have rich lives, they have rich culture, they have rich heritage, and we need to acknowledge that, respect it, and give them the proper treatment and protections that they deserve.
I lived for about 30 years just a few blocks from fields in the Homestead Redlands area. And I saw the kind of working conditions that these folks were in every day. There was a series of reports, I think it was last year, about some of the birth defect impacts. Are you familiar with any of the statistics on that part of the problem?
Well, there aren't, unfortunately, it's a problem of both the agencies and our system, but there are no good statistics that are being captured about farm workers and birth defects, although there has been increasing science that link different pesticides to birth defects. But there was a case that got nationwide attention in 2004 of farm workers in Immokalee. Three farm worker women gave birth to babies with serious birth defects all within a short period of time. And all of them had worked at the same farm in tomatoes. And all of them had worked in the fields and were exposed to pesticides while they were pregnant. That was a similar case. The fact that the farm was fined thousands of dollars for violations of these regulations, and then the Department of Agriculture that levied the fines, they came around and reduced the fines drastically. And so the families were left with babies with birth defects. One of the babies died. The other two survived. But that doesn't compensate the families for what they have gone through, both in their own personal health and the health of their children. Carlitos was the most famous case. He was a baby born with no arms and no legs. That family was able to get a civil suit against the company, and they were able to get some compensation. But there are many other cases that don't get that kind of high-profile attention that go unreported, unrecognized, and the families have to suffer. I think one important finding that's come out over the past few years links especially organophosphates and a particular pesticide called chlorpyrifos, which is very commonly used. They are now linked to long-term impacts on the second generation, including ADHD and learning disabilities. So
now,
if you're a farm worker and your child is born with learning disabilities, how do you prove it? And then how do you get help for your family?
For those of us who are familiar a little even to this situation, it's obvious, but these people are typically have no health care, no benefits whatsoever as part of their working relationship with the farm or with the gardeners, the industry that they're working for. So they're really based on their own. And since so many, educated Americans are unfamiliar with some of the pesticides being applied to their food, one has to imagine that some of these people are just not aware. I understand you've been very involved in educating farm workers on some of the dangers and how they can best protect themselves while they're in the field. Could you talk about your education programs?
Yes, we have a pesticide health and safety training program. The training was developed by the Farm Worker Health and Safety Institute, and we train a minimum of 500 farm workers every year on how to protect themselves, things like washing your clothes separately from your family's laundry so you don't contaminate your laundry with pesticides, things about the proper clothes to wear to protect yourselves in the fields, like such as long sleeve shirts and plastic or rubber boots, and different things like that. So we do these trainings, and the farm workers are really appreciative, and it does help them. However, we were doing a focus group once with some farm workers, and one of the women had taken our training before, and at the end of the focus group she said, "Well, you know, I do all that. I wear the long sleeve shirts and hat and gloves," she said, "but we still have to breathe the air."
Yeah.
And I didn't have an answer for that, because that's so true. And you're right, most of these farm workers do not have health insurance through their employer. Florida tends to be different than other states because of our climate. A lot of farm workers can work here 9 months out of the year, and if they're in nurseries and ferneries, they can even work almost year-round. So we have a lot of seasonal farm workers here that don't necessarily travel the seasons. So they're residents in this area. They have extended family. They have roots in the community, but a lot of them are undocumented. And I will say that it is inherent in our agricultural system to always be looking for a cheap, exploitable labor force to harvest the food that we eat. There are only two classes of workers in the United States that are not covered under the same laws that protect other workers, and that's farm workers and domestic workers. It took a while for it to dawn on me, but when I finally realized, I thought, well, you know, that's what the slaves did back in slavery time.
Yeah.
They worked on the plantations, and they worked as, you know, the domestics in the plantation owners' homes. So those two occupations are living the legacy of slavery. Our laws have not advanced significantly from those times, and the system of agriculture is always looking for a cheaper labor force. For many generations, it was African Americans that did agriculture in this country, until African Americans began to know their rights, with the civil rights movement, they were able to have other opportunities for other education and jobs. During World War II, when a lot of African Americans went overseas to fight, those were two periods of times when the United States looked for agricultural workers from Mexico and Central and South America. So you cannot talk about agriculture and pesticide exposure without also making the link to immigration, because, again, it's inherent. The system of injustice is inherent. It's a systemic problem within our system of agriculture. Right now, while a lot of the Hispanics are becoming more knowledgeable about their rights, and so we have found cases of farms that are trying to get guest workers from places like Thailand and the Philippines to come harvest our food, places where people are even more vulnerable and have less support network in the United States, know less about their rights, and have less language capability. So I think the things are connected. I know we're talking about pesticides, but I think it's all connected to look at the system of injustice that farm workers are facing.
I do want to touch on immigration and immigration policy with some of the things going on in Congress right now, but I want to ask you one more question about the pesticides. I'm sure as part of your education to inform these folks of how they can best protect themselves, part of the discussion deals with, if you will, the stickiness of these pesticides, that they're not typically water soluble, that they're very difficult to clean. Could you address that?
Yes, there's all different kinds. There's pesticides that are gases, there's pesticides that are liquid, and some that are a little pellets that are applied on the plants. So when we do pesticide trainings, we have a little skit that we do, and we take baby powder and we shake it onto the plastic fruits and vegetables that we have as part of the training, and we talk to the farm workers about the residue the powdery substance that's on the fruits and vegetables or the leaves of the plant is the residue of the dried pesticide, and that is sticky on the plants. And even though the pesticide may be dry and technically considered safe and not in its very active phase, if you're in working with the plants all day long, you are getting that residue on your clothes, you're getting that residue on your hands, in your hair, on your skin, and farm workers risk getting exposed to that even if they don't wash their hands before they eat, before they smoke a cigarette, if they touch their hair. So it's really critical. We tell farm workers that it's really important for them to take off all their clothes and put on clean clothes before they pick up their children when they go home.
Yeah, exactly what I was thinking.
And even ideally, they should take a shower and wash their hair before they even touch their children, even before they walk in the house, because they track pesticides into the home. There have been some studies that have looked at pesticide residues in homes. They have not been significant studies. There needs to be more studies of that with broader populations. But, you know, that's another thing, that you can do swabs in homes and find that pesticides are, on furniture in the household because parents bring that in. Another big problem in Florida and other places, but in Immokalee, for example, or in the town of Pearson, farm worker homes are oftentimes immediately across the street from farms or nurseries or ferneries. In one place in Immokalee, there's about 10 trailers that are surrounded on three sides by farmland. Well, children live in those trailers and they go outside to play. So the people are exposed not only at work, but oftentimes if they live in these areas, they can also be exposed in their homes and by bringing pesticides home on their clothes and bodies. We did I'm sorry.
I was just going to tell you a quick story. When my family was young, we lived in a trailer park down in Homestead, and we would watch the spray planes in the adjacent fields. And one day, I happened to be home, and at the end of the day, this spray plane just willy-nilly dumped what was left of his pesticide right on the trailer park preparatory to landing. And so I took samples of this material. It was literally like spotted all over the cars, not to mention the grasses and the children outdoor playing. So I wiped it up, took a sample to Derm, and they said, oh, yeah, these people do this all the time. And I said, well, okay, clearly this is not a safe thing to do. And they said, oh, no, we'll write a strong letter to them. This brings me to the idea of is there anyone in the state government interested in enforcing the law? Or are they all on hold?
The Florida Department of Agriculture is responsible for enforcing, EPA registers the pesticides and approves or disapproves, mostly approves, the labels for registration of the different pesticides, and then they contract with the state of Florida Department of Agriculture to do the enforcement in the state. So technically it's the responsibility of the Florida Department of Agriculture. I will say that I think that there's been a little bit of a change over the years. I think some of the people that we work with now in the Department of Agriculture, at least in terms of working with farm workers, there are several people there that have been really, really good and very concerned and very disturbed by finding out about the conditions for farm workers.
But
it's a huge job. There are 39 inspectors for over 40,000 agricultural operations in the entire state. So we have a problem. We need more inspectors. We need good inspectors. And we need tougher fines because, like you said, if they write a letter, what incentive is there for the crop duster, the farm, the pesticide applicator? What incentive is there for that person if it's a lot cheaper for them to dump the pesticide than to take it and properly dispose of it, and all they get is a letter, a warning letter? They have no incentive to do the right thing. And I just want to say one more thing. I think that that's also indicative of the need that we have in this country to move away from pesticides just in general, because how do we dispose of these things? Even so-called proper disposal, how can we properly dispose of chemicals that are so toxic and so dangerous? So I think that all of this discussion should lead us into caring about farm workers, looking for justice for farm workers, but also using that as a way to push for more sustainable agricultural practices that will help the environment and all of us in the long run.
Absolutely. When you had your meeting in July, who did you meet? Did you meet with anyone in Congress as well as the EPA?
We met with several. There was a Senate briefing on Monday last week, and we met with Senate staffers, and then the farm workers from the different states went to lobby their Congress people on the Hill. I actually was not there. We sent three farm workers from the Farm Worker Association to go, and they all had very compelling stories. One story, Miguel and his daughter went, and Miguel has been a farm worker for, I think he said, 25 years. He's been in this country for 25 years, and he's been a farm worker for all that time. He also worked full-time at one point for the Farm Worker Association, and now he works part-time for us. And I've known his daughters since they were 2 and 3 years old, and his one daughter now is 18. She went with him to Washington, D.C., because the story that she had to tell was that her older sister was born with asthma and learning disabilities. Now, Selena is 18, and Selena is beautiful and strong and intelligent and wonderful, and she's very upset that her sister was born with learning disabilities and asthma. Her mother was not informed or trained about pesticide exposure when she was pregnant with her first daughter. And she was working in the fields when she was pregnant, and when her baby was born, she also brought her baby in the stroller to the work site because she had not been properly trained. So Selena is impassioned and well-spoken, and that's the story that she has to tell of how it affected her family. And so go ahead.
I was just going to ask, has there been any studies of the blood of, the children of migrants to see what kind of loading they're getting even at one remove from the fields?
There have been some. The most famous study is the one, the Chamaco study in California, and that looked at babies born to women living in an agricultural area in mm-hmm. California, and that is the study that linked smaller head circumference and ADHD to exposure to organophosphates. But in terms of looking at older farm worker children, unfortunately there haven't been those kinds of studies. One of the things that our organization is demanding is that there be more studies of this. But then we get pushback from toxicologists that say that it's hard to make a direct link. That's a problem because in the meantime, farm workers are continuing to get exposed. How many studies do we have before we start protecting farm workers? How many people's health has to be impacted before we start protecting farm workers? Do we have to wait until we have a sick population? I work with a lot of African-American farm workers who are older now and no longer are doing farm work, but they were in the fields when the worst pesticides were used, pesticides that are now banned, and when there were no worker protection standards. And they come to me and they say, you know, when the white people's kids start having autism and learning disabilities, then you're going to get a lot of attention to this. But as long as it's just poor black and brown folks, they're not going to pay any attention. Well, there's a serious rise in autism in this country, And I think that maybe, unfortunately, that might be something that will move us to looking at some of these impacts of pesticides. It's too bad that impacts to farm workers' health hasn't been enough to spur those kinds of talks and debates. But we're hoping that with this campaign we can raise awareness and ask for more studies, ask for more enforcement, and ask for better regulations.
Well, thank you so much. But before I let you sign off, I want you to tell our audience, if they want to help, how can they get in touch with you? How can they get in touch with the program? What can they do to help? What can they do to contribute?
They can call our office. Our office number is 407-886-5151. Our website is floridafarmworkers.org. And we're also on Facebook and Twitter. And they can contact me personally. My email is farmworker@AOL.com. And we invite everybody to come join us because we are a community, and an injustice against one is an injustice against all of us. So we
Thank
hope
you.
That you'll join us in fighting for justice.
Thank you so very much, Jeannie, and best of luck with the wonderful work that you're doing.
Thank you. We really appreciate your having us on this show. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks, Jeannie. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, that was Jeannie Economos with the Farm Worker Association, someone who's involved in training people to protect themselves from the terrible dangers that they are exposed to simply because they're picking our food. Well, thank you very much for joining us. I hope that you'll tune in again, and have a good day.